God, set aside everything I think about, I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Help me let go of all my old ideas so I can live in your truth. God, help me carry your message tonight. Amen.
Amen.
Okay. Well, I'm rejuvenated. I had a couple of days off the meeting. I went to see the grandkids this weekend, and it was good. I realized I'd done 6 months in a row without missing a meeting. So you were probably sick of me, and I was sick of you, and we've had a break, so now we're all in love. And those people listening. Yeah. And now the people listening in the podcast have turned us off, and that's okay. But we're going to cover some great stuff tonight. On Wednesday night, we've been, I don't know, it's our 10th or 11th time through the book. We have a guest. And we're now finally getting to page 84 and 85, which is what some people call the recovered promises. On Sunday night, for those of you who can, we're going to cover, finish the resentment inventory instructions, and I'm going to cover my resentment cheat sheet that I wrote and put on the site, and somebody thought it was good. So we're going to do what are our mistakes, how we cause the resentments, and then we're going to look at that, finish on resentment. And on Saturday, we've been going through the family afterwards. We spent quite a few weeks on it. There's so much information in there. And I think we're towards the end of that this Saturday. And then I'm toying with the idea of doing a series of meetings on things that we say at meetings that really don't coincide with what's in the big book. So I thought maybe people might find that interesting. Anybody interested in hearing that?
Mm-hmm.
Things that you hear, and then there, what the big book says about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like there are no musts in AA, you know, and things like that. Think through the drink. That's a great one. I love that. Of course, we have an obsession of the mind. We can't think it through, right? So anyway, Amy's staring at me. Decide if you think it'd be a good idea. Stu's read the handout. It's pretty good. So we'll think about that. All right, tonight we're getting to the recovered, what's called the recovered promises. I heard some people call it that. I heard a speaker on it. A lot of people make a big deal between being recovered and recovering. And they go, I'm not a recovering alcoholic, I'm recovered. Well, you know, what is really the difference? They said that they were recovered, the people wrote the book. We have recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. But we're going to read tonight that we have a daily reprieve based on our spiritual condition, and we're never cured. So what's the difference between recovering and recovered? I think you wrote the book, recovered means that you're not under the power of alcohol, the obsession, all the time. That you've been given the ability that you don't have to live fighting the drink all the time. And that you have some power in your life that's been able to separate you from that obsession all the time. But it doesn't mean that you won't ever drink again. Now, we finished last week on the paragraph on step 10. It starts with this thought, and I covered that. And it'll be up on the site this week. That paragraph tells me how I live in the world of the Spirit with God. Because if I'm in the world of the Spirit with God, the promises will come true. Do they read promises in Pennsylvania? Everybody loves the nine-step promises. They're great because there are 12 of them, I guess. But the thing is, those promises only come true if you're connected to God. We will lose fear of people and economic insecurity. You've heard that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can lose it at 9 and have it at 10. And so the promises are come true when you're in step 9, you've done some work, and you have a relationship with God, and you're spending your time in that relationship, then those promises will come true. And if you lose your fear, you do step 10, you'll regain the ability not to be afraid. So step 10 is how we stay in the now with God, how we don't have to be dominated by fear, resentment, self-centeredness, self-seeking. And it's like 8 or 9 lines, and I use the acronym WATIT. We watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, or fear. When these crop up, we ask is the A, at once for God to remove them. You don't have to stay disturbed. You don't have to stay separated from God. Isn't that great? And then we discuss them with someone immediately, which is the D, which means if you're disturbed, why don't you call somebody so they can tell you how you're seeing it wrong? You don't call them to discuss it for you to get more disturbed. You get it? We don't call to discuss it so people can tell you you're right. They're wrong. You see, we're beyond that now. We want to be at peace and serene. Does this make sense? And so we discuss it with someone so they can show me how I'm seeing it wrong and I can let go of it. And then it says, we make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone, the A in amends. Now, there's something they left out in the big book I've called New York, and they're going to change it in the next printing. And it says we should forgive everyone, but that's implied. So whatever happens, you forgive and you make amends. And then it says, and this is how you set right any new mistakes in thinking. See, step 10 thinks you just admit when you're wrong all the time. I used to think that. Sounds good. Oh, I'm wrong again. You know, great. That's not what they're talking about in step 10. You're setting right your wrong thinking. Your thinking that's wrong. You don't want to act on wrong thinking anymore. You want to get your thinking connected to God. You don't want to be angry or fearful or have shame and guilt. They're laughing back there. Corey's not making faces behind me. All right. Anyway, stop. All right, calm down. This is a tough group tonight. And it says, we vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. So I live in this paragraph. To the extent that I do those things, my days are good. Now, the T is the big thing. It says, I resolutely turn my thoughts to someone I can help. Now, resolutely means with everything I have, I'm going to turn my mind away from me, which is my favorite subject. Anybody else have that problem? Turn away from me to those I can help. If you do that, you stop thinking about yourself and you stop whatever the crap is that's going on that's got you disturbed. And it says, love and tolerance of others is our code. And they left out of living. So we'll put that in the next book, okay? Now, love and tolerance is important to understand. Everybody agree love and tolerance is good? Mm-hmm. Good. So what is tolerance? I looked it up. The capacity to endure continued subjection to something without an adverse reaction. Your wife, your girlfriend, your husband, the boss, right? The traffic signals, the people on the highway, the people in line at Walgreens who have 18 coupons. I realized that that's just God's way of saying, Michael, you're going to work this step. See, the lady arrived just in time with all of her coupons to be there when I came in the store. Do you understand that? Just so I could practice being close to God. Our capacity for being narcissistic is unlimited, right? Mm-hmm. Capacity to endure continued subjection. Now, last week I explained how I see tolerance today. I see it differently. Tolerance has nothing to do with me tolerating them. Tolerance has to do with me not allowing myself to be disturbed by somebody else. They can do whatever they want. They can be annoying. They can be spiritually ill. I don't care. I'm going to put a barrier between them and me getting disturbed. So tolerance to me is, I get it from God, the ability to put a barrier between whatever happens and me getting upset. And it's great. So if I'm upset, it's because I've let that come through the barrier. And if I let God be my director, the barrier will be there. God will say, Michael, you're not going to get upset because the lady has 80 coupons or because blah, blah, blah. You're going to be tolerant. Tolerance is for me. Now, we talk about being tolerant of others and kind to them. That's important. But I can't be tolerant of them and kind to them if I've allowed them to annoy me. So I can't be tolerant to them unless I've prevented myself from getting intolerant from them. And then love, I looked it up. Because love that they're talking about here is from the scripture. Now remember I told you this, this book is based upon the New Testament, Sermon on the Mount, Book of James, and then 1 Corinthians 13, where he talks about love. That's the love chapter. Agape love. It means to be patient and kind. Now, if you have a card, I gave them all to Melissa so she could take them to Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. But if you look at this card, everything on the right-hand side, the characteristics of God will, and for those listening to the site, the spiritual checklist that you can find under Resources of Recovery on experiencethebigbook.org, patient and kind, not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude, does not insist on its own way, not irritable or resentful, does not rejoice in wrongdoing of others, rejoices in truth and never ends. Now, if we really try to make that our way of living, then we're being the person God created. Does that make sense? And so if I'm being loving and tolerant, my days are going to be good. I won't get disturbed, and I'm going to practice the characteristics that God gave me, not the ones that I acquire through my self-centeredness. Now, having said that, it now says, we have ceased fighting anything or anyone. Ceased. Stopped. Surrendered. I've given up fighting anyone or anything. Ceased it. Now, why do I do that? Because I can only fight if I think they're disturbed or there's something wrong with them. I'm not going to fight with someone who's spiritually ill or someone who's just being the way they are. Does that make sense? And I don't have to be right. I want to be kind and loving. So I will only fight if I'm self-centered. If I'm God-centered, I won't fight anyone or anything. They can't get me mad. Isn't that an expression? They can't make me mad. They can't make me disturbed. And I've stopped that. Isn't that great? Now, I'm not even fighting alcohol. Now, how you're fighting alcohol if you've got that obsession to use, right, or drink. And you have that if you're self-centered and you have no power in your life. So you have a power in your life now because we're talking about we're entering the world of the Spirit and how we live in the world of the Spirit. So do you want to be protected from drinking? Anybody want to do that? You got to get to page 84. So why do people drink? Why do people go to AA and drink again? Well, they're not in the world of the Spirit. They haven't done steps 4 through 9. They haven't acquired the ability to change their personality with God so that they don't get irritable, restless, and discontent. And then they seek God when they're upset and not alcohol. So you don't have to fight anymore. If you're fighting anyone or anyone, you go to God. And whose fault is it if I'm fighting anyone or anyone thing? Me. So I have to stop fighting everything and everyone. Did anybody try to be right? Anybody ever retaliate or argue, which it tells us not to do, right? It never works. And then here's the thing. I was going to say the hooker, but I don't know if that's good on the podcast. Here's the thing. I can't allow a spiritually disturbed person get me disturbed. And I can't allow them to control my mind. And so if I'm fighting someone or something, they've become my higher power. And I want to stop fighting them, and I don't want to fight alcohol. Alcohol's not going to be my higher power anymore. Why? It stopped working. It's not going to work. Everybody realize that right now? Everybody in this room realize alcohol is never going to work. But somebody in this room is going to drink again. Why? Because if we don't have any power in our own to say no to alcohol without God. Why do people drink again? Because they're alcoholics and they're powerless, not because they're bad people. It's not because they're not good people. It's just because they have no power. So if you want to cease fighting anything or anyone, including alcohol, you have to have a power. And you get the power by the time you're page 84, because you have these promises. And the promises just mean that you've been given these things by God because you've got God's power working in your life. When I have serenity and peace, that wasn't anything I'd studied. It's from God. God's working in my life. A feeling of uselessness and self-pity just disappears. It's from God. We're experiencing God. Does it talk about spiritual experience or awakening anywhere in the book? What about step 12? Having had a spiritual awakening, you're awakened to the Spirit. I just read, you watch with God all day long, and when you're resentful, fearful, self-centered, or self-seeking, you go right to God. He's right with you. And God will say, well, Michael, there you go again. And then sometimes I'll say, God, I want to go there. Great. He says, I'm a gentleman. Have fun. Come back to me when you're done. And so now I don't want to go too far because it's no fun, right? And that's how God disciplines me. And for this time, sanity will have returned. Well, what time? Is it like 10 in the morning? When after 6 months? When does it occur? It just happens. Sanity will have returned. Sanity means you can see the truth about something, the ability to think or behave in a normal and rational manner, sound mental health. Any of us have that when we come in here? No. So there's two types of sanity. I will be able to see the truth and behave normally to alcohol. I won't have power over me. It's a liquid, for God's sakes. Do you ever wonder how you gave your life to a liquid in a bottle? It sounds preposterous, doesn't it? But where does alcohol have power over me? In my mind, because I think what it's going to do for me, not to me. And so I react sanely to alcohol, but what else do I react sanely to? My fear, my anger, my judgment, my intolerance. I say, wow, wrong again, Michael. There you go. See what I mean? I'll see it now because I'm awake to the Spirit. I have God. So I want to get to page 84 and I want to live in page 84. Does the big book say how long it takes to get to page 84? Does it say wait a month, first step, or clear your mind before you work, any of that stuff? No. It says next and at once after you make a decision to seek God and have Him as your director, next and at once, you steps 4 through 9. How long does it take to do a 4-step? It takes as long as you waited to do it and then 3 hours. You see? Get it? You see, we delay, and we delay because our mind tells us we're okay. But meanwhile, we're powerless over alcohol and our mind's telling us, don't rush it. You see what I'm saying? And we want to get to page 84 and then live in these pages as sick quickly as possible. We never want to get too far out of the world of the Spirit with God. Now, Melissa's new. She's wondering, well, what other world can there be but the world of the Spirit? Well, it's the world Michael created, where I was God. Anybody else have one of those? And I lived in it, and it's preposterous. And when I live in that world, what happens? Fear, anger, shame and guilt, bad actions, nothing good. So steps 1 through 3 is just really, you said to yourself, I don't want to live in that world I created anymore. I'm going to move out. I'm leaving this apartment. I'm leaving this house. It's no good. I'm going to move to another house. And then the steps are how we get all of our things together and we move and we end up in this house where we have God as our director and we don't carry around all the shame and guilt and fear and anger we had our whole lives. But here's the warning. When you move to your new house, you could still create that. So you're going to have to watch all day long with God so you don't create more resentment, fear all day long. And that's why on page 86, the next page, it tells us what we do at night. We look and we watch for how well we did. And we ask God's forgiveness. So the 11th step where we inventory at night is tied into how well we inventory during the day. And then you go to sleep, and hopefully the next day you've resolved all the crap that you created from each day. And actually, the longer you do this, you find you don't create as much crap. You don't let it become big. You may get a lot of little crap, but you don't get big crap that dominates your life anymore. Why? It's a waste of time. It's a waste of time, and we don't want to waste any days we have left. Right? How many days did we waste? Now it says, we will seldom be interested in liquor. Seldom, but you may have it. If you think about alcohol, it doesn't mean that you're a bad AA member or you're failing. No. Because your mind's going to want to, from time to time, drift in there. Say, wow, you know, maybe I should have a beer or something. If I ever get that thought, I always think there's not enough. See, my mind never says, well, maybe you'll have one drink. No, it's like, well, then I have to go and get enough, right? And then I said, well, if I have enough, then I want more the next day. There'll never be enough. I think I'll just stop all that. And so I don't waste a lot of time in that. If tempted, tempted. Now, where does alcohol tempt me? Alcohol doesn't come out of the bottle and say, Michael, drink me. No. But it basically does, it tempts me. Tempt means to lure, to urge, or inclination to do something. And how do we get that? In our mind. We are tempted because we don't like the way we feel. So the treatment of alcoholism is to change who you go to when you don't feel good. And then how you change not feeling good so that you don't have to drink. And then what you do in AA is you learn how to not get too not feeling good, not to get too off the beam very much. So alcohol never enters the picture. See, when somebody's in front of me with 80 coupons, I don't say, boy, I need a drink. You know what I said? I should have driven faster. I should have left 5 minutes earlier. It's your fault. And I'll say, you know, I have nowhere to go. And I'm glad they have coupons. I mean, it sounds preposterous, but I'm sure there's somebody that's drank over things like that because we're so important. But it's preposterous, but it has happened. All right. If tempted, I recoil from it as from a hot flame. And can you see that? That's the reaction that's normal for an alcoholic because it is a flame. Now, it says on page, I wrote it down, but I'm getting old. I think it's page 24. It says, it talks about, it has a paragraph in italics, which is squiggly writing that's important. It basically says in that paragraph, you're screwed. You have no defense against the first drink. You'll never be able to recall in the consciousness the humiliation and defeat. So the people who are trying to figure out what the triggers are, this tells you the only trigger you have is being alive and awake. If you're an alcoholic, you have no defense against the next drink. Why? Because you're self-centered and you're living a life that's centered on self and you're irritable, restless, and discontent, and alcohol has power over you when you're separated from God. It says, the consequences that occur from drinking even a glass of beer don't come into the mind. If they come, they're hazy and readily supplanted with the old threadbare idea that this time we can handle ourselves. This is the complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on a hot stove. Now, everybody in this room kept putting their hand on a hot stove. It's insane. You see why people thought we were crazy? Well, why is he doing that? It's insane, but we couldn't see it. We kept putting our hand in the hot flame and saying, it's not going to burn me. But now, if you're in the world of spirit and you're tempted, you're going to recoil from it. Why? It has nothing that can make your day better. It has nothing that can make your life any better than just being with God. Now, what's the greatest thing you get in AA? From this, the 12 steps, you feel okay. You feel okay, and you don't need anything but just that. You feel good. Anybody have those moments when you just feel okay? Isn't that what we want in our whole life? It says we react sanely and normally. And we'll find that this has happened automatically. So those people who are studying the big book so they get smart, you don't get smart and react sanely to alcohol because you were smart when you did that. Why won't self-knowledge fix this? Because you can have all the knowledge about yourself you want. It won't protect you from drinking. What do we need knowledge of? God, God's will for us, God's power in our life. It happens automatically. So what time does that happen? You see how these things just occur? It's like the promises, they materialize. So one day you've been in AA for 8 months and you think of alcohol and you just recoil. You go, wow, that's a bad idea. Well, you've had a spiritual awakening. That's all it means. You can see the truth about it. We will see that our new attitude, now look at this, towards liquor has been given us. It's a gift. All everything we get in AA is from God. All we do is let go of all the stuff that's blocking us. We don't get a certificate. Good work. You're now AA Phi Beta Kappa. You understand yourself perfectly. You're never going to draft again. No. We get a certificate that says, good job. You got rid of all the crap that was killing you. Good job for letting go of everything that's blocking you from God. And it's just given to us without any thought or effort. It just changes. And so we can't, that's why when people have birthdays, I ask you, how did you let God do it? We don't take any credit for our sobriety. It's a gift from God. Now we have to take credit for doing the work that allows God to work in our life. It just comes, just happens. That is the miracle of it. You see, it's a miracle that we're all sober today. We can react sanely and normally to alcohol. We should never get too far away from the gratitude of just not being where we were the day we gave up. We should never forget how bad it was and how be grateful for what God's done for us that we're not there anymore. And all we did was come here and let God work in our lives through people and do the follow the directions. Now, if you don't take any action, nothing's going to happen. But if you take the action, God will come into your life. So all of our actions directed to allowing God to change my attitude, to give me the promises, to give me serenity. It says we're not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. Remember, we can go anywhere where alcohol is served. We don't have to be afraid. If we can't, then it's, what does it say in the book? You have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. Now, a mind of a chronic alcoholic is not recovered. That's the difference. If you're recovering, you may still have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. You don't want to have that very long. You want to have a recovered mind where you can see the truth about alcohol. That's why I think it's important for people to read this book. That's why I started the meeting, because this has the specific directions on how you can obtain from God the peace of the promises, and you can obtain from God the ability to see the truth about alcohol in your thinking. What a gift, isn't it? Now here's the key. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality. Isn't that something? And I can be in a position of neutrality towards my son-in-law, which I had to do on Sunday night at 5 p.m. I'm in a position of neutrality. And I could be in a position of neutrality towards my wife tonight if I come home. You see, neutrality. People don't have power over us anymore unless we give it to them. And I have a position neutrality towards alcohol. It doesn't have power over me. And I'm placed in it. You see what I mean? I don't learn how to do that. I get placed in it through the actions. So these pages, 83 to what we've read, are all gifts from God. And we if we just do the directions. If we do the WADAD, this will guarantee to come true. If we watch, we ask, we discuss, we make amends, and we turn, it'll always happen. Now, why do you have to do steps 4 through 9? Because if you're carrying around resentments from the last 30 years of your life, God's not going to be able to direct that mind and put you in a position of neutrality. You have to get unblocked. You have to get face and be rid of all that, all your fears, all your shame and guilt, so that you can start out fresh. Doesn't take a lot of work, but it's a whole way of cleaning your mind. Remember, Dr. Bob says, clean house. That's all we're doing, is cleaning house so God can now put me in a position of neutrality. Now, if my house is full of crap, God can't put that house in neutrality. It has to be cleared to be in neutrality for God to come in. Safe and protected. I'm safe and protected from who? From me. From my thinking. Who got me there? Me. So I'm in a position of neutrality. I can see my thinking. Does that make sense? And I can see the truth about it. We have not even sworn off. Anybody swear off alcohol ever? Everybody ever say take the solemn oath? Anybody take it twice in the same hour? Did anybody ever swear in the morning before they went to work that they weren't going to get upset? they weren't going to get upset at work. Anybody ever do that? And then at 10 o'clock, you're upset. Or you're not going to be afraid today. You see, and then we didn't have the power. But now we have the power to help us do that. Instead, the problem has been removed. Notice the problem has been removed. Now, where does it tell us we have a problem? On page 45. Is it okay if we go back to that? I may go a few minutes over. Don't tell anybody. Page 45, it tells us that we have a dilemma. All alcoholics have a dilemma. Page 45, lack of power. I don't have any power to live my life, and I don't have any power to not drink. Now, why is that a dilemma? Because I don't know how to find the solution. But then the book tells us how we do that, because it says we had to find a power by which we could live. Anybody agree with that? And it had to be a power greater than me. Obviously. Stu's favorite line. Now, it's not obvious to a lot of people because they don't do this. But if it's obvious to you, then you're going to do the rest of the work. But where and how are we to find the power? Isn't that a good question? Well, where you find the power is in the rest of this chapter and how we read it tonight and how it works. Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. It doesn't say keep you from drinking, does it? See, what is my problem? My problem is that I don't have a power to live. I don't have a power to manage my life successfully. And when I can't manage my life successfully, then I get restless, irritable, discontent. And then I have an allergy to alcohol. And if I drink it, then I can't control how much I drink, you see? So my problem is my separation from God. My problem is I'm living in the world of Michael, not in the world of the Spirit. So my problem is solved when I'm living in the world with God. You see how it ties into step 10? Because it says now your problem has been removed because you're not in the world of Michael anymore. You're in the world with God. And when I'm in the world of God, my problem has been removed. Now, remember this because the next three lines or four lines are really important. It'll change your life. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor we afraid. That is our experience. Now, their experience is what they encountered. Now, here's the key. This is how I react. This is how I react, how I'm going to, any situation, how I'm going to behave as long as I keep in fit spiritual condition. So the promises we read on step 9, they only come true if you're in fit spiritual condition. Your recovery from alcohol, you're recovered, only happens if you're in fit spiritual condition. The what we read in step 10, the WADAT, is how you get in fit spiritual condition all day long. And you get to fit spiritual condition to be able to live in the world of the Spirit by doing 1 through 9. See how it works? And if I'm not in fit spiritual condition, then what happens? I get disturbed, right? And when I'm disturbed, I'm not in fit spiritual condition. So I have to say, God, I'm disturbed now. I want to get back to you. Help me see it differently. You see how powerful this is? And a lot of people come to AA and they never get to this part. It's never discussed at meetings. So I hope this was helpful. Next week, we're going to read the warning label on the big book. There's a warning label in the big book. Did you know that? It says, warning, you're not cured. You have a daily reprieve based on your fit spiritual condition. And we'll read that next week. So thank you. We'll open it up.